And I teach on burnout. We talk about margin space. Like, how much margin do you have? Like, every book has margin, so you can read it, right? Like, it would be very distracting if every inch of the book was covered in text. It would be, like if a newspaper, like an editorial, were just from end to end. What happens when we don't have that margin? Obviously, we're leading ourselves into a place of burnout.
Hi, I'm Amy Kiefer, a nurse, doula, and personal trainer.
And I'm Crystal Howald, a women's health and orthopedic physical therapist.
We're the co-founders of Expecting and Empowered, and we just so happen to be sisters. We built this business because we saw a huge gap between the information that women were given during pregnancy and postpartum and the information that they need. We're committed to helping close the gap so that women are better equipped to navigate these demanding and challenging years.
Yes, we're both moms of three, so we know firsthand how many changes women go through physically, mentally, and emotionally because women aren't getting enough information to make informed decisions about their own health. It leaves mothers picking up the pieces afterwards. We need that to change.
With our professional backgrounds, we're going to pull the curtain back on this season and give you the information you need to thrive.
We're on a mission to change women's health. Let's do this.
Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Asheree Nareem, who is a licensed clinical psychologist certified in perinatal mental health. She is an incredible resource over at Psyched Mommy on Instagram. She was really a go-to for me, especially early in my motherhood journey. She's also a mom herself, which is a big reason why she added perinatal mental health to her education. So I'd love if you talk us through the first postpartum experience you had and how that changed the way that you view and talk about motherhood.
Yes, thank you for having me. My first postpartum experience was a doozy. And it's the very reason why Psych Mommy even is a thing. And I always joke, and I always talk about this regularly, like if you would have told me, 10 or 12 years ago in my career that I would be working in this with this niche, I would have been like, I don't think so. I don't know why would I be doing that? Why would I ever be doing that? I don't think so. But my oldest, he is almost seven. And the reason why this is so tricky for me, and I think this is something that's like common for other parents, is that I wanted him. He was not an unplanned pregnancy. I tried very hard to get pregnant. I had two miscarriages before I had him. So the idea of becoming pregnant with him was like an answer to everything I'd ever wanted. So to find myself experiencing, I started having anxiety throughout my pregnancy. But if you would have asked me then, I would have never said this was out of the scope of what is normal because, we're pregnant. We are, this is due to hormones. It's kind of like my doctors had attributed it to, and it's kind of what I felt. But now as I reflect back, was the start of like a lot of anxiety and a little bit of like OCD throughout my pregnancy where I feared so much that was going on, partly due to just the trauma of miscarriage, a high risk pregnancy, after that. I never saw this because when you're in it, you're in it. Like we were just chatting about. And so postpartum, I was even more anxious. My need and my desire to protect him was so heightened that it became crippling and it really took over. But then I also felt this like feeling down and dysthymic and not like myself and irritable, which was so out of character for me. And I found myself snapping about, the nap schedule wouldn't go according to the plan. They said I do all the things. I did the five S's. I've been doing all of the things that they told me. He's not sleeping. And I was just not like myself. And I remember sitting down on the couch. My husband was in the kitchen. And I was just talking. We were talking about how everything was going. And I said, I don't feel like myself. And, he didn't really know what to do with that information because, hey, he probably didn't feel a whole lot like himself either. And I just knew that. That's all I knew. And I felt like this, it was like a dark cloud, like the world around me was going on. And I was like stuck in time. And I say this because wasn't until maybe I was 18 months postpartum that I started to reflect. And I was like, oh, that was a dark time. And now I'm feeling a lot better. And it took a long time with no intervention. But I thought, how many other parents are feeling this way and don't know what's going on with them, how to improve it, because no one is really talking about this. And this was a time before I feel like there was so much on social media So I started Psych Mommy back then and was just posting educational content about like my own experience. And I was going through certification for perinatal mental health at that time. And it was the most, then it was like the most viral content that I was sharing. So I'm like, there's a need for this and people desire to know more about this. And so I just kept going from there. And that's how the platform became what it is.
You and I had connected right before we got started, and I shared a story with you, a time in my motherhood where I experienced something that we want to hit on today, which is mom rage, was after I had three children. I was telling you, I had weaned my third. The pandemic had started. My parents got divorced. We were trying to keep our kids home. Like, it was this time where no one really knew what to do. And what came out of me was this anger that was unrecognizable. It was like I would snap so quickly. Like it was like I could hold it and hold it and hold it in, but then the snap was like so ragey. And actually, at the time, I found your blog post on mom rage, and it was something where it was hard for me to open up about it, especially at the time. I kind of had really prided myself on being like a calm mom that, like, I don't know, I could handle motherhood until I kind of couldn't. So I want to talk more about mom rage. What is it and what does it typically look like?
So when we're looking at rage, there's a couple of things. Like, I always want to like start off by saying, like, there's a lot of emotions in the human experience. We can't make them go away. So when we talk about rage, let's just back up a little bit. When we talk about rage, there's like the spectrum of experiences, right? And so often when we're talking about mom rage, people are like, well, I'm just a little more irritable. And there is a spectrum. Like, you can be annoyed, irritable. I'm feeling kind of mad. I'm angry. There's rage. There's fury. Like, obviously this is a spectrum of an emotional experience. So what we find, and even like through looking at the research, there's not a ton of research on this experience, but what we find is like, there is this biological, this like psychological experience of perinatal rage that is secondary to depression and anxiety. So moms who might be predisposed to anxiety or depression, maybe they had this experience prior to pregnancy. Maybe there's somebody in their family who has experienced depression or anxiety. Perhaps they are more sensitive to hormonal shifts during their cycle. And, you know, pregnancy is a big one of those that will trigger that a shift in their hormones. So they are just feeling this increase and change of emotion as well. So there is that experience of how this can be a psychological experience that we're talking about. And I say this because most of the time when we think of like moms that are depressed, what do we think? We think she's weepy, she's sad, she's laying in bed, she doesn't want to get out of bed. That could be the case. But then there's also this profile that we see of an irritable mom. Like, mom is more irritable than she was before. And like, just like you described, it's like, it's out of my character. It's not necessarily who I am. Something as simple as like my partner left the dishes out is sending me into a full on, you know, like I'm blowing up over this. And it doesn't make sense to me. So we look at rage from this perspective, like I'm anxious, and we look at anxiety and anger. They are really rooted in our nervous system. So it makes sense. Those two can really be related. There is this depression profile, like this depressive mom who is more angry. Obviously this makes sense. But then when we're looking at this outside of the psychology piece of this, outside of like any predisposition to mental health, any, like, there's nothing else going on and I'm just feeling angry and there's nothing else that I'm experiencing. We talk about, and Erica from Momwell and I talk about this in our upcoming workshop, Parental Rage, is our response to society, our response to the demands of parenthood, our response to some of the unrealistic expectations that we have of moms, the unequal divide in our home, the lack of care, or just our lack of, we don't respect moms and the care work that they do. So there's this, a number of things that can cause that. And what it looks like, obviously, is I feel more angry. And, you know, everyone's giving us some kind of solution, but we're like, no, you don't get it. Like, I am not respected. I am, you know, unseen. I am underappreciated. So I don't know if I answered the question completely like that you wanted, but there is this, like I'm saying, there's like this two. It's like if you're looking at like a Venn diagram, we're like seeing this response that we have to a very real experience where we are undervalued in society. And then there's like this biological piece, you know, this we're predisposed to any mental condition that could also trigger rage and anger. And how are they different? Well, often when you are feeling, if you are just having this like societal response to it, like if I feel like I am now being seen, I am being respected, I am getting like the rest that I need, I am doing the things that I love to do, this rage, this irritability can resolve itself. If this is something that's attributed to a mental health condition, it's pervasive and it's not going to just resolve itself necessarily because one of our needs are met or two of our needs are met. This can also be something that requires additional care and support with a provider.
I, at that time, I saw a therapist for a year, and that was so helpful. And I do also want to mention, I tip more towards depression than anxiety, and that's my family history. And I feel like anxiety is, I don't know if this is just my perception because it's what I have, but like anxiety is talked about a little bit more and almost more normalized. So I did just want to speak towards that link between the depression and the rage can also be seen.
Yeah, of course. And I think you're absolutely right. And I even think this is true on and what I share. I actually recently surveyed my audience to ask them what of these experiences they felt like they aligned more with and what they would want more support with. And most, you know, kind of gravitate towards that anxiety. And that makes me wonder about the stigma.
Yep.
An anxious mom appears to care. I'm saying this from like a perspective of, I don't believe these things, but this is what an anxious mom is, you know, heightened in her worry and in her just care for her children. But what does a depressed mom mean? And often we are relating this experience, and I have this own experience myself, but like, if I'm depressed and if I'm disconnected, what does that mean about my relationship with my children? Does it mean that I don't love them enough? Does that mean I don't care? And my mom and I actually had a conversation about this early on in my postpartum experience with my first son. And I was very depressed and I was very down in the dumps and I was crying a whole lot. And I want to preface this by saying my mom is an immigrant. She, very different cultural, like cultural experiences, generational experiences. She was also quote unquote, like an older mom, like an AMA mom back in the 80s. So in like the Middle East, well, from the Middle East. So she was like, what do you mean? Like you feel this way? Like she was asking me this. She's like, do you not want him? Like, do you not want your son? And I'm like, I'm going to lose it on you. Yeah. Like, but you know, that is not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. And I think that can be interpreted this way by not just my mom. And I don't like fault her. Obviously we've resolved this, but I think a lot of people can view it that way. Like, oh, you're so depressed, but you asked for this. You wanted these kids. And now you're depressed. Like you don't have time for that. So I think there's this distinction between the two experiences, and that's why we don't maybe hear so much about it. And maybe that's why people don't openly say like, I'm feeling depressed or down, and rather like I'm leaning on this anxiety. And that's my experience.
Yeah. I love that in this conversation, we can kind of use our own experiences to hopefully help to normalize this conversation a little bit. I did see one of your posts, and it said, you're not an angry person, you're a mother. So I did want to talk about some common triggers or events that could come up for moms that could potentially lead to mom rage.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's go. Let's do this. There are so many. One of the things that I think of, like just like a biological need for sleep. I mean, obviously we are sleep deprived. I'm currently sleep deprived. We were just talking about this before we started recording. Lack of sleep, there's like a biological trigger that's going to make the anger centers in your brain and in your body just like very vulnerable to this experience. So we're not getting adequate sleep. There goes a trigger. There goes a, you know, something that's going to predispose you to feeling anger and rage. But then we're talking about like just basic needs. Are you nourishing yourself with good food? Are you getting time to yourself? Do you feel like you are recognized or seen in society, in your family? Like you are a human being, or do you feel invisible? This is often something that will come up in therapy. Like, I just feel like someone who's giving. I'm giving to everybody. I'm giving to my partner. I'm giving to my kids. I'm giving to every single, my dog. And then I just feel like I'm invisible. There's like not even a thank you. Because oftentimes, which is actually makes me sad, is that moms are not even looking for a whole lot. They're just looking like, I see you. I see all this hard work you're doing. I can't resolve it for you. I can't change it for you. But gosh, I see all the stuff that you're doing. And I'm so thankful that you're part of this family. Like, how does that move the needle in our relationships? It does, right? And so there's that feeling of I'm unseen, I'm underappreciated. But then there's so many other little things. I have talked to mom over like a decade about moms that are passionate outside of motherhood who continuously just lose that side of themselves, where they are at this fork where they have to make a decision where it's like, is it my career? Is it my family? And I'm going to sacrifice everything for that. And I say that, and I kind of, I'm like, we're going to get some feedback on that, because people are like, well, isn't that what you're supposed to do? We would never question a dad. We would never even be having this conversation about a dad who is choosing a career or choosing to, you know, leverage their career or take some time away or go on a work trip or do something, one of their hobbies. We're like, oh yes, you know, you deserve that. You work so hard. And so the conversation still is very lopsided when it comes to these things. So that's another thing I find contributes to this experience of rage is we're kind of reduced to the care work that we do. And it's almost like we don't have an identity outside of that. You know, people are like, oh, you just stay home. Or, you know, we forget that, no, you're a person. You're a mother who has desires, who has passions, who has ideas. And we do lose a lot of that. And I don't want to say lose, because oftentimes that there is a pause that has to happen. Mm-hmm. We can't balance all of the things. But what these are just some of the things that I find trigger a lot of those feelings of irritability and anger. And one of the biggest things that we will talk about forever is just the unequal divide and distribution of labor in the home. It is very maddening. So that is something that people are not prepared for when they enter their partnerships. I mean, you can have a solid, rock solid relationship and you bring children into the world and it'll flip everything upside down because you thought you had it. And you're, you know, it's not like you have a terrible partner. It's not like your partner is like this innately bad person. You just have not had these conversations and you weren't prepared for all the complexities and how it changes the dynamic in your home.
Absolutely. We're going to get into talking about partners in a little bit here. I did want to shift gears a little bit into mom guilt. A lot of these things, they just play hand in hand. So when people become moms, is it often the experience that they do experience mom guilt? Is it something we're all cursed with? Is there anything that you can coach us on to try to lessen the mom guilt?
Oh man, how much time do we have? But mom guilt.
I feel like every single question I ask, I'm like, this could unload a whole episode. Yes.
And I'm a therapist. So it's like, I'm verbose. So sorry. We're like, I'm going to try to keep myself on track here. But yes, mom guilt is a very common experience. And I like tread lightly with saying like everyone experiences, because I've never met a mom who didn't experience some kind of feeling like this. First, I always want to lay the foundation, like the differentiation between guilt and shame. If you're not familiar, like we often say mom guilt, you know, guilt is not always bad, because guilt can be productive. Guilt tells us, hey, like I'm doing something that can be wrong. Like, I mean, imagine I raise my voice at my kid. I hurt their feelings by saying something that I probably shouldn't have said. And now they're upset. The guilt is triggering that, like, hey, Asherina, that wasn't right. You got to make that right. Guilt can prompt us to change course and make better decisions. So it's not always a bad thing. Shame, however, we can't do a whole lot with shame. Mm-hmm. Shame is taking that experience and saying, there's something wrong with you. Asherina, you are a monster. You should have never done that. Like, it will just be like a self-deprecation. And shame is not productive. It kind of stops us in our track and it makes us feel terrible about ourselves. And most often I find that people who are stuck in some kind of cycle can't get over that piece of shame with themselves. Like they think and feel so poorly about themselves that it keeps them stuck. So why do we feel this way? Well, I think we feel this way because of a lot of unrealistic expectations that have been set for us, right? There's a lot of programming that happens very early on in our lives. And this can happen just like with expectations in early life. And then we think of like the portrayal of what motherhood looks like on TV. I mean, I don't know who you were watching on TV, but did you ever see like a mom who was like having a hard time keeping it together, really stressed out, you know, having a hard time regulating her emotions, snapping at people? Probably not. You know, the moms I saw growing up on TV, man, they had a generous amount of patience. They were always soft spoken, and that, so that starts, and it might seem silly to talk about that, but those are like some of our earlier experiences with like how we see moms, and then evolves. That's how we talk about it. Most moms that I know, they're not like my close friends will tell me like exactly what they're experiencing, but like most moms will just like keep it, you know, they like, there's this like outward portrayal of what motherhood should look like. And we're so scared to even share what it looks like. So if we walk around thinking everyone's got it all together but me, you start feeling bad about your experience. So I think that is one contributor to this. But if I were to say, like, how do I walk through this and how do I not feel like I'm drowning in guilt for every single decision I make? This goes a lot back to our value system. And the biggest piece is if when we're starting to like fall into this guilt and shame pattern, we're usually living like not according to our own values. I was recently talking about this on in a workshop. When I first started my motherhood experience, and the reason why I felt so just this dissonance was that I was like a chameleon mom, where I'd get with this group and I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe that's the right way to do it. Ooh, you know, then I get with another group of moms and they were like, they're all natural moms. These are the homeschooling moms. These are the, I make everything from scratch moms. These are the high, you know, the moms that are working so hard and they're multi-passionate and multi so successful. And I'm like, my head was on a swivel, just spinning. Like maybe I want to do all of these things. And I couldn't figure out who I was as a mom. So instead of like living according to my values and what that even looked like for me, I was trying to do what every other mom was doing. And that's when I got stuck in like just the task of motherhood, like the little things, and not the connection piece, not like what I truly wanted out of it according to my values, like what I value family time. I don't really care about all those other things. You know, I value having fun and laughter. Like laughter is high on my priority list. Experiences are big for me too. So when I started to really figure out what those things I value were and how that connected to my role as a mom, that's when I started living in a way that didn't have so much guilt. And that's when I go back to like, I tell myself this regularly, even still, when things are making me feel a little off, I'm like, keep your eyes on your own paper, keep your eyes on your own paper, because we can all live a great motherhood journey and have great children and do it different. So I have to just keep my eyes on my own paper, reflect on what my values are and keep it moving.
It's so wild how strong that guilt can feel, even if you are living in your own values. So my example is when my son was young, my first son, I had a really hard time taking time away to go work out because I was already a working mom. I was a nurse at the time. So I felt like, okay, I'm already leaving him to go to work. And now on the weekend, I'm going to take more time away. Like this is the time I have with him. And my partner was just like, Amy, you have to take some time for yourself. Like that is so important. We are fine. You go. And so I would go to the gym I would just allow myself a half hour. I would rush back, like run inside. This is how bad it was. I mean, I'm just speaking really honestly here. And they would be perfectly fine. And he's like, why are you rushing around? Like, we are fine. I have this. So for me, I really felt like it was a practice. Like I had to keep doing it even when I was uncomfortable or that guilt came up, but I could question it and I could work through it. And that really helped me. So if women out there, they're listening and they're relating to my story and they're having a really hard time with their internal dialogue and taking time to even take care of themselves, how would you start to help them?
Ooh, your story actually is a very common story. That's something that comes up so often where moms are like, but I can't do anything else because maybe I'm working outside of the home. And now like, how dare I take care of myself? You know, when we say it
Yeah.
out loud, it
Yeah, I
sounds kind of
know.
silly,
It's
right?
wild. Yes.
But I also want to offer some support because this is like it's a common experience. And I don't want you to think like you shouldn't even have those feelings. Like I don't want to guilt moms into feeling guilt. You know, like you should feel bad that you're having these feelings about taking time. We don't need any more guilt than we already have. So I will say, like, it's okay. If this is your experience and you're feeling that way, it's okay. And it might not be today that you like feel like better immediately. I will say that like the cool thing is that these feelings do prompt us to be evaluated because we care so deeply about our children. So there's something to be said about that. Like I'm taking this role so seriously, right? I want the best for my family, and that's awesome. That's awesome. But then it's like the one thing that does make me feel a little sad is that the best way that I encourage moms, even in therapy, is not to think about themselves as a human being, but when we think about the impact it has on their family. And that makes me sad that we can't think of ourselves as an individual, but it's always in that dyad. Like the decisions I make impact my family, and that right there will move the needle. If I say, if you don't take care of yourself, if you don't do these things, what happens in your family? And then they're like, well, I'm irritable, I'm snapping, I'm not getting good sleep, I'm not taking care of my kids the way I want to. The time that we have together isn't the best. And that is how we encourage moms to take care of themselves, which is so backward. Instead of like starting from, okay, I am a whole human being, an individual, and I have needs. So what are those needs? Let's identify what those are. What make me feel the best that I can just for myself, not for everybody else, but just for me. And how do I do those things? And I get it, like some of these things are going to change in parenthood because our time is, you know, divvied up a little differently. Like we don't have all the freedom to do all the things. But if we were to think of ourselves as individuals who have needs, what would that look like? And should I feel guilty? Because like if we're going back to the feelings of guilt, is it something, am I doing something wrong? Or does this go back to a message or an idea that I have that says I'm not allowed to, or I shouldn't feel like I have, you know, I'm allowed to. And then flip the script. Somebody asked me maybe a year or two ago, do dads feel guilt? Does my partner, I'm gonna tell you what, my partner does not feel guilty. He will go to the gym. He's at the gym right now. I think he'll go to the gym and he will exercise and work out. And it has never crossed his mind that it's taking away. And in his mind, it's adding. It's an addition to who he is as a person and like everything that he needs. So this goes back to the messages we learn, the programming that we have as women that we're supposed to be giving of ourselves. And that is like our main purpose is to give and to, you know, overgive, to think of others. And this is very early programming that happens. So we just have to be mindful of the messages that we have, but then also be gentle with ourselves. Like, okay, I do feel this way. There's nothing wrong with me. It's just going to take me some time. And like you said, leaning into it, keep doing it in manageable small ways. Okay, maybe I don't feel comfortable leaving to do this. Maybe I'm going to take some time and go in my bedroom and take, you know, X amount of minutes and do a little workout, or maybe I'm going to go for a walk in my neighborhood. Find what balance and what feels good for you, but it is different for each of us because we all have different circumstances. But I know that feeling myself, so I'm not going to act like I've got it all together and I'm never going to feel that, because I will feel it probably today or tomorrow. You know, like it's still going to come up for me.
I remember when Drew and I went on our very first date after we had our first, I made him go to literally this local close by place. And honestly, that's what I felt most comfortable with. And then we could build from there. So I always encourage people to start, even if it's a 10-minute walk outside and it's something you wouldn't have done before. I think that's a great starting point. And now, a quick break to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, Expecting and Empowered. Have you ever wondered, is this workout safe to do after having a baby? What should I do to recover in postpartum? If you have, you're not alone. And the good news is, we've got a program for you. Whether you've had a cesarean or a vaginal birth, our app is designed to meet you exactly where you are and help you to restore your pelvic floor, core, and rebuild strength after having a baby. One of our app users said, "I worked out religiously prior to pregnancy and felt so lost postpartum until I found these ladies. The workouts are just the right length to be able to fit it into a busy day. C-section
recovery is no joke, and they've built the guide from experience and expertise. You can sign up for the app now for 25% off with the promo code podcast25. This brings the yearly subscription down to just $10 a month, and this includes every app program, including strength training, yoga, core, and running. Visit app.expectingandempowered.com to sign up today, and we'll see you guys in the app. Now, the next thing I wanted to touch on, I also experienced. So we're just going through all of my issues as a mom. But this one is this idea of our time has to be spent productively. Mm. And it's not even a, it wasn't even a conscious, like, nope, I can only be productive. But like, I just saw my choices in front of me. And like we talk about the load of parenting, there's just always so much to do that you could almost never keep up anyways. Mm-hmm. It got so hard for me to do something for pleasure. So to sit down and read a book, I don't think I read my first couple years for pleasure, like, you know, a fiction book, God forbid. Just taking time to do rest, just maybe watch Netflix, do something like that. So, but I do think women really suffer when they never give themselves non-productive time. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Mm-hmm. We talk about this when I teach on burnout. We talk about margin space. Like, how much margin do you have? Like, every book has margin. So you can read it, right? Like, it would be very distracting if every inch of the book was covered in text. It would be, you know, like if a newspaper, like an editorial, were just from end to end. What happens when we don't have that margin? Obviously, we're leading ourselves into a place of burnout. And I don't want to tell people or like coach them into like what level of productivity or non-productive time that they should be spending, because this is very different. What I've come across from like meeting with people for how many years? I don't know, 12, is that we all have a different need when it comes to productive time or rest. So it's like you have to, it's like a trial and error. You have to figure out what works best for you. And I love something. I saw Susie from Busy Toddler. She talks about this, like how she cleans and does these things in front of her kids. She doesn't do it during nap time. She's never done it during bedtime because she wants her kids to see her doing it, because she doesn't want them to believe that it's like some magical thing that happens while they sleep and they just wake up and their house is cleaned. And I'm like, I love that concept. And also bringing, you know, your family into that can be tricky, because I know this, but like inviting your kids in with you to do the work, some of that work, or your partner, whomever is home at the time, because it's not just your work. So I do enjoy that concept that she shared. But when we talk about like being productive and, you know, non-productive, I think this does go back to like what we believe, like some of these messages that we believe about not just how we raise our kids, but our home and our work, and this idea of balance. Because it really doesn't exist. You know, we're always giving something up just a little bit. I'm not saying like you can't do three things at the same time, but you know that there's always a clear like leader in the race. Like when I am all in and at work and I'm like, ooh, this is just going so well, I know that my house is probably a disaster just a little bit. You know, like I'm like, there are going to be some things that I'm responsible for that I do that are going to take a back seat. Or when I am spending all of my time connecting with my family, I know that there's going to be emails that I have not responded to. So what does productivity look like? It's so different for each of us. And I think that this is one of those things where we like have to reflect on the messages that we believe about productivity. Like, what does it say when my house is a little, you know, lived in? What does it mean when I'm not as responsive? And that's like another thing I used to, and going back to a personal story that I just remembered that popped into my head is, I used to have this problem where if someone emailed me, I felt like I had to like, you didn't see this side of me, Amy. So I apologize. I was delayed on like every email you sent me, but there was this time where if I got an email or if I got a request at work, I would have to like do it right then and there, because it was like this bigger message about who I was as a person. Like, I want to be so responsive. I want to be like, I want you to be able to rely on me. I'm a dependable person. And I want you to know that. It was like, I needed this like validation or this reminder that I'm good. And I think sometimes, not all the time, the productivity is like a check mark internally for us to say, like, I'm good, I'm measuring up. And it's really, really hard to break away from those messages, I will say. It takes a long, I mean, I'm 38 years old, am I? Yeah, I am. I'm 38. And it's like, I'm still telling myself, Ashrina, you don't need that. Like, you don't need to do that to be good or to be viewed as good or to like have rest. Like, I don't have to work to earn my rest. Can you imagine telling your kids that? Like, I know you want to sleep tonight, but you know, you've got to put in some work here, buddy. It's just like, it's so silly when we say that. So there's a lot of unlearning that happens in the motherhood experience that kind of sucks because it wasn't our burden to bear, but here we are navigating that. And I think that's a whole another conversation we could have that I will spare you of all my thoughts on.
Well, a theme that is coming up for me during this conversation is the idea of eyes on your own paper. Because mm-hmm. I think what else happens is, say, I come into your house and everything is so, looks so clean and you're so together and you've got a system for your mail. And then I go onto Instagram and I see this woman has like the best refrigerator ever and she's got all of her fresh vegetables and all of her fresh fruit. And so we're constantly like looking around and subconsciously or consciously thinking about how we don't measure up. Mm-hmm. And so how could anyone rest if there was always this higher standard that they're chasing? Rather, can we figure out like what is really important to us? So Drew and I, my husband and I, we live in a lived-in home. Mm-hmm. During the week, we just feel like there's too much to do. We do have our kids contribute, but it's just not going to be perfect. And we have come to terms with that. Like, it does not make me feel bad or less than or anything like that, because that's just something that we're like, we're willing to accept that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a great philosophy. And honestly, it really has to come down to what works. We try to alternate on like closing duties. So whoever's putting the kids to bed is doing closing duty, like the other person's doing closing duties. And those are not like, I'm cleaning my house from top to bottom. This is
right,
like,
right.
I'm setting
what's your bare minimum? What's your bare minimum?
Clean the sink out, get the lunch pack, get the, you know, who's doing the water bottles and all that stuff. Like, who's doing cleaning, like closing duties, and who is taking care of the other thing? It's like, you have to have whatever works for you. And it's not like we've mopped the floors and it's clean and we're like going to video it. Cause I would never, there's no, if you got in my fridge, you would not see clear bins with organized food. And I think what you're saying is so important. I almost forget about it. Cause I don't think I look at any of that stuff for my own mental health. But even when you look at it and you scroll past, like rolling your eyes, you're still taking in that message, right? There's still some internalization that says, whoa, there are people that exist that like the measuring stick is so high, you know, that check mark is so high, it feels so unattainable. And it's a tricky thing to navigate. And I think like media literacy is like a very important topic for moms to know, like, okay, what's behind this reel? What's behind this image? Mm. What else is at play? How is this person able to make that happen? Not to downplay what they're able to do. Like, this is their job. Like, you know, this is what their job is. They might have additional supports in place. That's mm-hmm. very valuable to them in their priority list. But I am choosing not to prioritize that for my mental health, and because it does not work in the system in place in my home right now. So, and there's nothing wrong with the two. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the two.
Okay. I'm going to bring up another big topic here.
Okay,
and it does go right along with burnout a lot of the times. And that is resentment.
Ooh,
I know this can really creep into partnerships. It certainly did in ours. I really felt it after our second child when, like we just referred to, like I had no more margin. I had nothing. I could not keep doing as much as I was doing, and I did need my partner to step up. But before I logically could think, okay, I need him to take stuff off my plate, first came the resentment. I have told people I was like, honestly, like clanking around pots and pans, like just like feeling so angry with him. So I want you to talk about what are some common reasons that women do feel resentful in their partnerships?
Mm-hmm. This is a great question, because I think often this is one of those experiences where you might not even know why until you dig deep, because you just feel the feeling. And that's why the things that come up in arguments are so, they seem so off topic. Like you're like, well, why did that upset you? And often in therapy with couples, the thing that brings people in, the thing that they were arguing about is not the thing. It is not it. It is something much deeper. You know, it'll be like, gosh, he just always leaves, like, you know, like his hair all over the sink. He's trimming right over. And it's, I'm so upset about this. But are you really upset about that? Or what is the deeper thing below it? And I'm not saying every single scenario has something deeper. Sometimes it's just like, okay, pick up after yourself. But that, going back to this example, it's like, well, I was the one that cleaned that space. And here you are coming in and making a mess. And that makes me feel like all that hard work I did was undone. And you didn't even appreciate it. And you didn't even clean up after yourself. You didn't even like contribute to this space, which we both live in. It's not my responsibility to take care of all those things. And that's when we get to like these underlying messages where it's like, I don't feel like you're contributing your share. And I feel like the work that I'm doing is undervalued. And it's not like, no one is talking about how important this work is that I'm doing. So often what leads to resentment, there's a few things, but there's an unequal division of labor. Like I am doing more. And I get that. So like, there's never going to be a time where you and your partner are doing things like so 50-50. When I talk about division of labor, we talk about things have to be agreed upon and they have to feel fair. And when there's things that are not agreed upon and you are defaulted into a role and it feels very unfair, you are going to start feeling bitter and resentful, because it just, who wants to be in a partnership where things feel unfair? Nobody does, right? Like you wouldn't want to be in a workspace where you and your team are responsible for a task. You did all of the work, but you're all going to get the same bonus. And you're like, well, that stinks. You know, like this, I did all that work. I could have got a bigger bonus if my employer recognized that I actually did all the work and nobody else did any. And that's what it starts to feel like. And you'll start to tally things up in your mind because you're like, I am doing my fair share and my partner isn't living up to this, you know, like they're not rising to the occasion. There's that. There's also this experience of, I am not getting any of my needs met. And I'm recognizing my partner gets to do all of these things easily. You know, they're getting to come and go as they please. No, like they don't have to report. You know what I mean? Like that motherhood, like a report, like, hey, I'm going to go for a walk. You got your eyes on the kids? Like sometimes it feels like mothers are the only people that have to do that. And I don't want to make such a generalization, but it's very common practice, right? Like I'm going to the bathroom. You got the kids? Okay. Like keep your eyes on them. So when we feel like, oh, somebody else gets to come and go as they please, they get to get all their needs met. And I am like barely scraping by in my needs buckets are empty. They are like so empty. I've got nothing to give. And this imbalance will lead to feelings of resentment. So there's like the division of labor, my partner's getting to do all the things that maybe they're not even a thought for me because I'm in survival mode. And then there's like expectations. Sometimes our old stuff, you know, we all have a scene set for us for what partnerships should look like, whether that's from our parents, our grandparents, what we saw on TV, what we saw around us. And sometimes those old patterns play out in our adult relationships where maybe why don't I just go ahead and share like a dynamic that has played out for me as an adult? Okay, so it's a little bit of self-disclosure. My mom was always one of these people that kept things to herself. She didn't ever share what her needs were. She never shared all of the stuff, but instead she would throw, like I used to call in high school, I'm like, oh, she's throwing a silent tantrum, where she was upset. We could tell, but she never talked about what it was. And so like bitterness and resentment would grow because she never communicated anything that was going on in her internal experience. And I saw that play out in my parents' marriage. And I can sometimes, like, if I get there where I'm like, I'm feeling frustrated, but I'm stonewalling almost, or I'm like holding it all in. I'm like, whoa, there goes that old pattern. Like I can just feel it and I can see it for what it is. And sometimes we do this so unintentionally. It's like a pattern that was handed to us and we don't want to do it. And we have tried our whole lives to say like, I'm not going to play that out in my life again. But it's just like, it's like a reflex. So that is another thing that can contribute to some of these feelings. If we're not careful, we'll replay old patterns because they are ingrained in us. And we have like these pathways that are, it's just like so easy and comfortable to get into those patterns without like saying like, okay, I need, this is not how I want to live my life. I need to stop and say like, I need to communicate my internal experience so that my partner actually can do something with this instead of punishing them silently. So those are a few of the things that I find come up, the themes that come up in therapy.
One thing that I think is really cool, and I'm sure you've seen it so much in your work, is a couple really can get to a better place. I know that my husband and I have really worked through this. One thing that comes to mind that's helped is I used to really have trouble saying no to him when he asked something. I would say yes when I meant no. And so this just came up this week. He asked if he could go to a high school basketball game tonight. And I just knew like I didn't have the capacity to take another solo bedtime. And so I said no, even though I still feel somewhat uncomfortable. I wanted you to give a couple more examples of like if resentment is a part of the partnership right now, in what ways could couples start to move the needle on that?
I think what you shared is so important. Like your no's are no's. They're not half no's. They're not like, oh, I should say yes.
But can I be honest? It's an internal struggle still. I still think I'm like, oh, gosh, I wish I could say yes. Like, I do want to give him that time. And to be clear, he had Tuesday basketball already, so he already had a night. But it's like, I still have to coach myself to say the no. So I don't know if that's still something I need to work on, but I say it now at least.
I think it's so important. We had a group of friends that used to joke about this. And I think it's this portrayal of like the cool wife.
Yes.
Oh, you're such a cool, relaxed wife. Like, why is that a thing? Right? Like
Yeah.
that I'm supposed to say yes. So like there was a group of our friends and they would ref this is something that they would call me. Okay, so I will share this. This is another piece of self. They would call me the warden. This is a legitimate thing that they would call me because I'm like, no, I'm not okay with that for these very reasons. Like, I don't want, and we don't really hang out with these people anymore. But there's this concept and this idea of like a cool wife, a laid back wife. She just lets everything fly, right? Like, oh, sure. And this just perpetuates all of these messages that we're talking about and this lopsided dynamic in your home and the resentment and bitterness. So it's like, yeah, I could say yes to everything, but what is at stake here? I'm going to be bitter. You're going to come home and I'm going to be like, how was bedtime? Fine. You know, it's just like it's not going to be who I want to be. And obviously, like there are going to be examples where you and your partner get to go do things independently. And obviously, like you can agree on those and they can feel good and you can say yes. I'm not saying that you should always say no. But when you know that you cannot give anything else and you need your partner to like link up with you because I'm drowning and I need you, you say no. And obviously, like going back, like this has to mean like in a dynamic where you and your partner are on the same page. I recognize there are plenty of partners who are not going to be respectful for this or can be very defensive and can put you down or make it seem like it's your fault. So I offer like, you know, all of like a virtual hug because I recognize this is really challenging. So in some situations, therapy is like the couples therapy is needed. But when we're talking about like how do we get through some of these things, it's like taking these conversations head on in a respectable way where we're not taking all of those angry and bitter feelings and we're dumping them on our partner. We always talk about this and like this isn't new, this isn't like revolutionary, but taking all of our feelings, you know, and then we share this with our partner. Okay, my first thing I always tell every single client I've ever met with is like, send a message how you'd like to receive it. I know for a fact if my partner came up to me and he was like, okay, you have not done anything, I would be like, my ears are closed, I'm ready to box. Like, not, you know, like not in a literal sense, but like, I'm just like, I'm not hearing it. I'm ready to argue back with you because I'm getting like ramped up as you're talking. But if we talk to each other in a way where we're identifying our own personal feelings, like how things make us feel, and then what our positive need is, not what our partner isn't doing, not what they have not been doing, and all of the ways that they have screwed up or messed up, but like what I actually need from you, we can do something with that. We can't do anything with the dialogue of like, hey, for the last, you know, year, you have really fallen short in all these ways. So you need to step it up. Like they don't maybe know what that means. But if I say, hey, you know, you went out on Thursday and I just noticed that I felt, I don't know, I felt really lonely and I felt like it was imbalanced. Like I was getting to do more with the kids and I didn't really like that. And so from what I think what I would really need moving forward is that like we have this conversation, we're both honest with one another. And if I say like, no, I don't feel comfortable. One thing I really need from you to help me move forward is that you wouldn't give it like dish it back. Like give me like these little digs or comments about like how you never get to do anything because that just seems unfair. And I want to be on the same page. Does that make sense? And then, so like you have these conversations mm-hmm. where you're identifying what your feeling is, what the positive need is moving forward. And this is just a random script I came up with. Like, obviously don't take it. If it doesn't work for you, you have to identify what that looks like. But we want to talk in a way that's respectful and that we can get our partner to actually listen. Right. And this goes both ways. They're going to say stuff to us. And I'm going to tell you what, when my husband has something to share with me, I'm not going to say I always love it. I'm not like, oh yeah, here we go. Let's get some feedback. It stings a little. It does. It's like, oh, okay. I'm not perfect. Okay. Share it with me. Like, tell me what you need. And that's the way we move forward. And the better, like, I have a whole freebie on this, actually. I don't know if that would even be helpful, but it's navigating some of these tough topics where there's 46 conversation starters where when you are in this place and you don't know what to say or how to approach it, I give you some of the words just to get you on the, just to start you off. So that might be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it takes work. It is, you know, we are imperfect in our partnerships. Drew, in the beginning, when I started saying no, he'd be like, well, Asherina told her husband he could go. And I was, oh, yeah. That is great for them. Like I'm still a no on this, uh-huh. You know, and it is like the growth and as a couple, like to also point out to Drew, I was like, you always, when I say a no, it's like, you don't respect it. And now he's way better at taking a no. So it's like, I just like when people are honest, like the behind the scenes, it's not like, oh yeah, you start doing this. And then like, it's easy. It's like, it's not, it takes both people to kind of grow from wherever you are.
Of course. And you're like overcoming a lot. Like if you've been doing it one way for so long, yep. You're going to actually go back into some of those old patterns. And then you almost have to like do like a little check-in where you're like, okay, we're doing this again. I don't like it. You know, let's get back on track. So I think that's the thing. It's like, people will often send me feedback like, yeah, well, we started this. It was good for like a month. And now we're falling back into old patterns. It's like, yeah, you've been doing it for like a decade. It's going to happen. You know, it's going to take practice. You're going to have regular check-ins where you say like, hey, I've been noticing, I know we were trying to get on track with this, but we're backsliding. Like, how do we get ourselves back into a position where we both feel good? And then talk about it. Like it's not like magic. It's just,
right.
It's going right. back to the, you know, what we agreed on. It's like, let's go back to it. Change is hard. And I think this is where like, we have to give ourselves and our partner grace. Like, have you ever tried to make a behavioral change and you're like so stuck and struggling? And like, I know this for myself. I make a commitment to myself. I'm like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to change. And then I fall back into all these old patterns and I'm like, ugh. But then when I'm asking my partner to do something that is actually a big change for them, I'm like, oh, you did not get it. Like what, we're back here again. So like, we just want to keep that in mind that change is challenging. It's hard. Mm-hmm. Like have grace. Obviously this is like I'm talking in the context of like a respectable relationship that's not abusive. But you want to have these conversations and you're going to repeat some of those conversations and you're going to problem solve together. And if this is a partnership that's worth, you know, keeping for you, then you're going to keep trying. And I don't know everyone's dynamic. That's why I kind of like add those caveats because I don't know what the context is. I'm just saying this in this context, like where you are two people who actually want to change and want things to be good and want to move forward in a positive direction.
Absolutely. Okay. I have learned so much today. If people want to learn more from you, can you tell them where they can continue?
Of course. I am Psyched Mommy everywhere. My website, psychedmommy.com, Instagram, Facebook, I think Pinterest. I'm not really active on TikTok, but yeah, all the places. That's where you can find me. And my blog has, I think, there's quite a few blogs on all the topics that we've discussed today. That's absolutely free. So I would highly encourage any of the listeners to check that out as well.
I can't tell you how many times I've been on your blog. They are so well done, and I absolutely love it as a resource. So if you guys enjoyed this episode, we would love if you shared it, tagging @PsychedMommy and @ExpectingItEmpowered.
Thank you so much.